Oh gosh, we need to edit that out. I'm not gonna.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're talking with Deanna Adams and Valerie Wade. They are two of the authors contributing to Women v. Religion, The Case Against Faith.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Hey.
And Tim Wick.
Yo.
And today we are here with two really exciting guests. We have Deanna Adams.
Hello.
And we have Valerie. I can't find your last name. Valerie Wade.
Hello, how are you?
Hello, sorry. I had my notes and all of a sudden my inbox just disappeared on me. So Valerie and Deanna are here because they are essayists who contributed to a friend of the show, Karen Garst's latest book, Women v. Religion, The Case Against Faith. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
So we are here to discuss specifically the pieces that you two wrote, and you kind of wrote two halves of the same, of a similar area in the book. Can you please tell us the title of your essays?
Sure. Valerie's is first, so.
Yeah, oh, Valerie.
First? Oh, okay, sorry.
She's part one.
I'm going like last because of ABC orders, so yeah, that's just a really weird habit. So the title of my essay is Black Women and Christianity in the United States, Part 1. And my essay sort of explores the connections between Black women and the Christian church sort of from Africa to roughly emancipation. So.
And then Deanna?
My second half is Black Women and Christianity in the United States, Part 2, and it's basically the civil rights movement to the present.
Excellent. So I think that I really enjoyed reading both of these essays, and I think that they were especially educational to me. I am a white woman, you know, living in a very white state, and I think that something that has been really frustrating me lately in feminism is the lack of intersectionality and just the voices of Black and other POC women being completely ignored. And so I'm just curious, have you written on this topic before?
Go, Deanna.
I think we should probably give each other like signs since we're both on the
team. Yeah, I'll just start asking one of you directly, and that'll just be a lot easier.
Well, I'm a blogger. I've been blogging for almost 4 years now. Not so much in the last year, but my blog is focused on the intersectionality of religion and racism. So I definitely talk about religion, my lack of religion, and also how that intersects with social justice topics, racism, and a lot of the things that we've been dealing with lately or over the past 4 years or so. So I've been writing on that topic for a while. I am really excited that Valerie agreed to write the first half of this book because she is actually a historian, like a real, real historian. And so when we were talking about doing this project, I said, well, I can't do this whole thing. This is huge. You know, this is the history of a whole people that are still here and still dealing with these things. So why not have a historian talk about the historical, issues that we've dealt with? And so very excited. And this is the first time we've actually been on a podcast together, so I'm kind of giddy too. She is like the most amazing historian I've ever known in my life. And I don't know a lot, but still, she's awesome. And her contributions just helped make this more accurate. I look at it from a sociological view mostly, and just having that background and having those resources and having that factual information to base everything on, I think just made both of the essays 10 times, 100 times better.
Valerie, what have you written on things before? I mean, obviously you're a historian. I'm guessing that's a yes, even if, you know, but...
Yes, in, I guess, a few sort of different ways. I'm not much of a blogger. That's something that I'm hoping to change, to sort of get these ideas out of my head and actually, like, onto some sort of page. But I have a lifelong interest in women and history and the ways that different cultural traditions touch women's lives and affect them. So when Deanna, you know, contacted me about this, I mean, I was just so excited because it gives me an opportunity to sort of make some connections on a topic that I think are often sort of overlooked. Like, people just sort of think of, like, oh, the Black church and women and African-American women in these sort of, I think, very linear ways. But there are just so many different ways that those things connect historically. And I'm really happy that this essay gave me an opportunity to sort of play with those ideas.
Yeah. In your essay, Valerie, you talk about the club women. The Black club women and how that was a way that women were able to, even though there was all this misogyny in the church, that they were able to get together, you know, and really find leadership roles. Were there non-religious clubs that women belonged to?
You know, I am sure that there were, but the ways that the church sort of functioned in the African-American community during the Reconstruction era, and in early Jim Crow, I feel like, and I would venture to say that even if you weren't particularly religious, you still had to sort of engage with the church in some ways because that's where all the meetings were held.
Sure.
That's where, nice. You know, the community met. You know, that's sort of, it was more than just a religious space. So that's something that I'm still sort of exploring. I can't say for sure whether there are, you know, explicitly atheist Black women's groups. I'm pretty sure there were, but they aren't really present in a lot of historical documents for reasons that you can probably guess.
Of course.
It's in a lot of communities, it's sometimes hard to, the lines between like a community center, a religious building, a meeting space, like some people get different things from that same building or same organization that while it might be religious in nature, like kind of inherently, what people get from it might not be religious.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Deanna, one of the things that I liked, especially in your essay, because we've actually talked about this 2009 Pew survey of Americans and when it came to religion. And that was one of the few, that was one of the first times that, you know, the people who were considered nuns were kind of being counted. In that survey, your piece mentions that 8 out of 10 Black women said that religion is something that's very important to them. And yet they are vastly underrepresented in church leadership, in large part to 1 Timothy 2:12, the suffer not a woman to teach or speak or whatever it is.
God damn it, that's my name. Oh, shoot.
I know. Tim, they're taking your name and it's still one of the worst bits. But so I what I wanted to, if you could expand more on, you talked about the prosperity gospel and how that was, you know, employed by the community as a way of trying to explain these systemic prejudices and the differences between, you know, why are we not seeing all this prosperity that all the white people are, you know, among and in the same, you know, growth of America. Could you expound on that a little more?
Sure. So as far as women not being in leadership, of mm-hmm. course, that, you know, it was, as you mentioned, the scripture that says, you know, women shouldn't teach. And mm-hmm. then, you know, there have been some women that have said, well, no, Lydia was a teacher. And so that negates that scripture. And so they go back and forth with each other. But as far as the prosperity gospel, it was, you know, you're not praying hard enough or you're not sowing enough seeds or you're not, you know, you're robbing God. That was another one. That's why you're not progressing in life, or that's why you don't have the job or the home or the, you know, things that you want, because you're telling us that you're tithing 10% and you're giving offerings and you're doing these other things. But God knows that, you know, you're really only tithing off of the net. You're not tithing off of the gross.
Oh my
so
God.
That's why.
Oh, just fuck that.
I mean, I like to say it. I've probably said this in every conversation I've had surrounding this book. In our community and in most communities, really, God always has an escape clause. So, you know, it's kind of, you should do all these things so that you can be blessed. But if you're not blessed, well, that's just because, you know, he has a bigger blessing for you later, or
exactly.
because, you know, you're not doing this right. So there's always a reason for, you know, us not having the things that we need. And, you know, on top of all that, one of the things that we talk about in the chapter as well is, even though we're one of the most religious groups in America, Black women, we're also, you know, other than the fact that we're most educated right now, but the other kind of markers of health and wealth and things like that, we're at the lower parts of most of those, you know, higher rates of diabetes, higher rates of high blood pressure, lower rates of wealth, lower rates of, you know, even when we have the increased education, which is one thing that I do like to point out, we've got that part. But even with that, we're still making less than a lot of other groups, and we're still, you know, fighting these ill health effects. And so it makes you wonder, with everyone sowing seeds and everyone, you know, praying the right way and doing what they're supposed to be doing, what gives? Like, that's the problem here.
I think if you went to some of these people that are giving the, oh, you didn't pray hard enough, or the, like you're saying, the escape clause, if you went to those same people with someone that professed to be a psychic or a fortune teller, and they were asked to prove their craft, and they said, oh, your doubt is making my powers not work, or your skepticism is ruining the, I don't know, flow of the room, or the chasing off the spirits or whatever. Like, I feel like the same people that are saying you're not praying hard enough or tithing enough would call bullshit on those psychics, but I don't
or
see much.
Or even call that immoral.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't see much difference between the two behavior.
I mean, well, one is more accepted in the culture.
Right. Yeah.
Thing. Absolutely.
So if enough people believe it, it must be true, right?
Shared delusion time.
Yeah.
I just I wanted to say that one of the things that I was taking in both of your essays, and it's something that we've talked about on this podcast before, is the idea of religion as control, that Christianity was used as a means to control the slave population. And in a way that control has kind of twisted in a different way by giving men control in the Christian church, that continued that same issue going forward where Black women are concerned.
Yes.
Is there a question?
No, I really appreciated.
Well, and it brings up a really key point, which is, I mean, do you think Christianity does more harm or good in the Black community, like the communities of today?
That's a tough one for me. I think that Christianity, as it is traditionally practiced in this sort of patriarchal, rigid way, has done a lot of harm in our community. But to me, that's different from saying that it hasn't done any good at all. I do think that a lot of people through their church groups are out here volunteering. They're taking care of needy kids or the elderly. Like, they're doing good things through the church. But I think just sort of as a system, if that makes sense, it has done great harm just as far as the way that we think about gender, science, logic. Like, it's done some really weird stuff to us psychologically. And that's why I'm so excited about this project, because I think it does give us an opportunity to think about, like, why are these things problematic? Why are we still holding on to certain traditions? And when is it going to be time for us to actually change that? So,
Valerie, obviously it's difficult to do a ton of research on this sort of thing because they weren't really taking opinion polls. But before Black women especially were brought over, you know, kidnapped and brought over on slave ships, like in those old African religions that you were looking over, was it a vital role to the community, to the women in the community, to women more than men? Like, was religion as important in their lives as it is purported to be now?
It was important to everybody, regardless of gender. This sort of weird gendered approach to religion is something that we've seen, like, recently in the Americas. But in Africa, it was so central to everyone's lives, and women actually had a place of respect in various communities. And I'm speaking in gross generality, of course. Like, it's, of course, different, you know, from tribe to tribe and village to village. But generally speaking, women were valued and held to a certain level of respect that was lost over time.
Well, and I mean, the thing is, coming here with the crazy, you know, like, we already have such puritanical, you know, just patriarchal bullshit over here that had been going on for years and years. I mean, it's just like a double way of poisoning an entire people, you know, is by bringing our bullshit into their own religion and ruining it. Just a quick question about when we were talking about tithing and with the prosperity gospel and things. I think that, you know, you had mentioned, Deanna, that harms Black women the most because they are underpaid. They are, as you were mentioning before, you know, having, you know, lower measures of wealth and not being seen. They're not getting job opportunities, you know, and career advancement. And I think that, like you were saying, tithing makes it harder on in that case. Is it a case where women feel like they need to then double down, tithe even more, like give more of their money away, or are we seeing a shift toward economic sense, I guess?
Well, hopefully we'll see more of a shift towards that if more women read this, how it's being harmful, you know, mm-hmm. So reading the book and taking all the different issues in and kind of applying that to their own life. You know, I was raised Christian, and I tell people all the time, one of the first things that happened to me when, you know, I left Christianity behind was I got a 10% raise. So, you know, my savings account grew instead of me giving, you know, this percentage to the church at all times. And I know when I was in that type of environment, the messages that we got were, if you're not getting this, then you need to, you know, like you said, double down. You need to pray harder. Mm-hmm. You need to tithe more. Mm-hmm. You need to sow more of a seed. And there would be, you know, special offerings just for, you know, if someone wants to get a job today, you know, come in,
oh my God,
put $50 in, or, you know, that type of
thing.
That's
so predatory.
It is.
It really is. And, you know, it's funny because in my background, I've been in, which is limited, I definitely admit, but the things that I've personally seen have been in small Southern Baptist, but not Southern Baptist, because those were the white people, but small Southern Baptist churches, small non-denominational churches that were more like cults, and the large prosperity gospel church. So I've experienced all three of those types of churches personally. And, you know, a lot of the things that I saw in the prosperity church was, and that one I was in for 10 years. And I saw women year after year after year after year giving, you know, for a new car or for a new job or, you know, not even for things like huge things, but just for the ability to live comfortably.
Just basic necessity, you know, type things.
And of course, if they got a new car, they would assume that it was because God gave the new car, not because they worked hard enough to be able to afford it.
Oh, yes, definitely. God got all the credit for everything all the time, unless it was a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Then it was, you know, your fault. But I watched women work just outside of the church, work really hard at their jobs and be really, really great. And I'm, you know, like, wow, you did a great job. And to this day, it's still, oh, no, 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 I didn't do anything. It was all the Lord. And he opened this door for me and he opened that door. Or, you know, he gave me this and he gave me that. And, you know, it's just, sometimes I lose my thought on it because it's so... it's so pervasive. I just want to kind of shake them and be like, no, you did this. You worked really hard.
It feels like the sunk cost fallacy. Like, if you give and give and give, and from a person's perspective, it almost might seem like an investment to right. then turn away from it would be to admit that everything that you've sunk in was for nothing. Or, I don't know. Do you think that there's any sort of people in their rational mind realize that this isn't going to work out, or this isn't like a productive path to some kind of success or health or happiness, or is it believed like top to bottom? I know it's going to vary person to person and it's hard to make
right.
generalizations, but I just have such a hard time believing that people truly believe it like to their core. And that there's not that, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that. I'm sorry. It's just, it's so frustrating to see people take advantage like that.
I can tell you I did. Even to the point of where, you know, I came into a large sum of money when I was in my early 20s and had been in the Prosperity Church for a few years. And I tithed 10% off of that money. And thinking that, you know, I was grateful that God had allowed me to, you know, deal with that, even though the way it happened was, you know, depressing. Yeah. But I mean, I did. When I was there, I believed it. And I can tell you from someone who's been there and then has come out, one of the first kind of emotional shifts that happened for me was I realized that those were all sunk costs. You know, and that was very hard to deal with. I was embarrassed for a long time when I was coming out of religion and when I was studying and realizing, okay, snakes don't really talk. And I knew that snakes didn't really talk, but the rest of it is not quite true either.
Right.
There was a long period of time that I had a lot of, you know, I switched the guilt and shame for embarrassment. And I had to deal with, you know, moving forward. And so one of the things that I like to talk about as well when we have these discussions is we have to understand the history, which is why I'm so glad Valerie is here with, you know, that historical perspective, because a lot of people just they cannot wrap their mind around how someone can believe these things wholeheartedly. But when you've been in an environment where that's all you know, and when your ancestors, that was all they knew, and then the ancestors before them, it was beaten into them.
Yes.
It's not that hard to think that, okay, this must be the way because this is what got us out of slavery, or this is what got us through the civil rights movement. And that attribution goes to those places too. So when you take it all, you know, in totality, it's not that hard to understand why people would believe such things. But of course, when we look at it from the place that we are now, it's kind of like, I just can't believe people believe this. Well, they did. And they did for some good reasons.
Yeah. So, Deanna, do you identify as an atheist?
I do. I'm definitely atheist. And beyond that, I'm a secular humanist. I think atheism is just, I don't believe there's no evidence for a God to me.
Sure.
That's just it.
Valerie, what about you?
I lean more agnostic slash cultural Christian, which is sort of a phrase that I know is weird to use, but you know, I grew up in the church. It was a huge part of my formative years. But I definitely have some heavy critiques about a lot of things. I agree 100% with everything that Deanna is saying about her experiences and the sort of pressure to tithe and behave a certain way. But I just, now as an adult who can make my own decisions, I'm not in my mom's house anymore. I lean more like agnostic. I leave room for, you know, whatever's out there is out there. But as far as the sort of dogmatic traditional church beliefs. Like, no, that's not really me.
Yeah. In Deanna's piece, she references Benita's monologue from Raisin in the Sun. And in that is when Benita is saying that she doesn't, that there isn't a God, and that there, she gets so sick of God getting all the credit, and that there are miracles, but they're done by man. And she's, you know, she gets just slapped full in the face. would you say that still a common experience for Black atheists, especially women? I mean, are you expected to keep the church and be religious and have families and pass that down?
Yes. Short answer, yes. That is something that has been sort of a point of contention between me and my mother. I don't even really discuss it with my grandmother, because mm-hmm. that's just, I'm not even trying to go there. No, sometimes you just have to, like, let the elders be who they are. Her faith has gotten her through some really, really hard times. She grew up in Jim Crow, Louisiana, and you are not about to stand in her house and tell her that, you know, Jesus isn't who she thinks he is. So that's just
right.
I mean, there is still a lot of pressure to, you know, you sort of toe the line, and it's seen as extremely disrespectful if you don't. Now, of course, some people have really open-minded parents, or, you know, people whose parents aren't that, you know, into it like that. But to say that you are an atheist in the Black community, especially as a woman, is still, I think, a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And I'll let Deanna speak on her experiences. But for me, yeah, it's still a big deal.
Yeah, it's definitely a big deal. I'm, you know, fortunate because my mother's still in her church. She still, you know, is very, very Christian. but over the years, I've been basically an out atheist now since, I guess, 2011, I started my questioning, and 2012, I'm like, that's it. And, you know, I did the whole angry atheist thing at first, you know, everybody lied to me. And so I'm going to tell everybody that this is, you know,
they need
crap.
To know.
Right. Everybody needs to know. I'm much more mellow now, but I'm fortunate because I really thought my mom would, disown me. We've not exactly had the best relationship growing up, so it wasn't beyond the realm of possibilities that she would say, you know, don't ever talk to me again. But she didn't, you know, she actually didn't. And, you know, I was pleasantly surprised by that. She did for the first couple of years, and probably still does now. She just doesn't see them as much. But she did try to subversively talk to my children. and, you know, when they would go to her house, you know, well, you know, your mom can believe whatever she wants because she's an adult. But in my house, you guys better believe in Jesus. And,
you know,
my oldest was atheist before me. You know, they just would never tell me. And so when I came out of it, they were like, I don't know, 11 or 12. And it's like, finally, mom, really, finally, because I hated going to church. It never made any sense. So we kind of deconverted together. But,
How did you two? So I know, Deanna, you said that you were excited to work with Valerie. How did Karen approach you, or how did you get involved with the project?
Let's see, how do we connect the dots here? So I had the blog. Oh, I remember. So in Houston in early 2016, January 2016, Sikibu Hutchinson, the amazing writer of books like Moral Combat and, you know, things like that, she came to Houston, and I was a part of Houston Black Nonbelievers at the time. And so she came to Houston with her Secular Social Justice Conference, and I was a panelist on Feminisms of Color, her panel about, you know, feminisms of color and how that intersects with, you know, being secular and the social justice movement, because then, as in now, there's a lot of secular people, a lot of atheists, a lot of non-religious people who don't believe that it has anything to do with social justice, and they want to keep it separate. And I tell them, well, humanism isn't exactly humanism. If you're calling yourself a humanist, you might as well just be a racist atheist. So whatever. but getting back to the story, so I was a panelist with her, and then I think Karen approached her about who she thought would be a good addition to her second book, and my name came up, and I'm very grateful for that.
That's great. Deanna, what's the name of your blog?
It's Musings on a Limb.
Musings on a Limb?
Mm-hmm, like a tree limb.
Yeah. Excellent. Just .com?
Yep, .com.
Wonderful. And Valerie, you are a historian. Is there anywhere we can find you? Any writings online, anything like that?
Sure. I have a small little space online. You can just go to vcwade.com and learn about me there.
Wonderful. All right. Thank you both so much. This was really informative. I really cannot recommend the book Women v. Religion enough. Women v. Religion, The Case Against Faith. It's available now.
On Amazon, right?
Yep.
Yeah. We'll put a link.
Absolutely. It's time for five questions.
Five questions.
So I think what we'll do is we'll go Valerie, then Deanna. How's that sound? And we'll just make it that way and no one's cutting each other off. So it is our five questions. We sent them to you a little ahead of time, so hopefully you've had some time to think. And we'll just start now with question number one with Tim.
Question number one, what conspiracy theory do you find most interesting or compelling? Doesn't mean you have to believe it.
I am fascinated by the theory that there are cures for various cancers and HIV/AIDS, but that pharmaceutical companies, largely conceived, are sort of holding back on those things because they make more money if people are sick. Like, they want people to be okay, but just okay enough to still need medications. So, yeah.
That's a weird conspiracy. I've always thought that was a strange one. Like, that I think it really has its roots in just people's fear of getting sick and there not being anything that anyone can do.
I think it's lending entirely too much credit to pharmaceutical companies.
That,
like,
too.
Like, there'd be one scientist who would be like, nah, fuck this. Like, I don't trust people's ability to keep a secret well enough.
You're wrong, Nick. They killed them all. All of them.
All right, Deanna?
So, mine is actually a COINTELPRO. I read a lot about Black Power movements and things of that nature. And, you know, I fully believe it, and it's been vetted and it's been proven now, but for a long time that was a conspiracy theory that the FBI planted people in various organizations to bring them down, but it's absolutely true.
Oh yeah. I mean we've got I mean there's like evidence of it now, isn't there? I mean actual, yeah. Now that the records have been made public.
Yep.
Well, Hoover was a crazy fucker.
Yeah
And super racist.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Question number two.
Question number two is, what's your perfect 2-week vacation? And money is no object, but physics is still a limiting factor.
So my perfect 2-week vacation would be to spend time in Kenya and Tanzania in Eastern Africa. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to go. I want to just sit out in the sun. I want to spend a lot of time learning about their different textiles. They have beautiful fabrics and fiber arts there. I'm just fascinated by it. So I'd probably just be sitting somewhere with a lot of weaver women learning all of their tricks. And
that sounds awesome.
Yeah, a fabric vacation sounds cool as all hell.
Yeah, it really does. I dare.
So mine is a little different because I have 3 children. So my perfect 2-week vacation is 2 weeks in Kauai without them.
Nothing weird about that at all.
Right, just doing whatever. Fortunately, I've been able to do that for about a week, and it was amazing. Just, you know, ambling around, going to the beach, riding the bike one day, just no appointments, no one else talking to me.
Going to the bathroom with the door shut and no one's yelling for you. And okay, great. Question number three, what is a movie or book that changed your life and why?
Oh, this one's so hard. Books and movies. I will say that The Wedding by Dorothy West is a book that, I don't know if it changed my life, but it changed the way I thought about storytelling. It was made into a TV movie in the 90s, I think, with Halle Berry like I vaguely remember that, but it's just a really interesting book that weaves together history in a really cool way, and I just always related to it. So
excellent. Yeah,
that and The Count of Monte Cristo, I just love that story. Yeah. So.
Excellent.
So most recently, Ebony Exodus by Candace Gorham really changed a lot for me because I read it. It was, I believe, the second book that I read when I was going through my deconversion. And that one was so special to me because it was a book of all Black women's stories of being atheist or agnostic. And it really made me feel like, okay, I'm not alone in these thoughts. I'm not some anomaly that's out there being blasphemous and, you know, I'm not going to be struck down at any moment because I'm the only Black woman thinking this. So right. Most recently, that book has, it changed a lot for me and it helped me on the road to where I am now.
Well, that's huge, honestly, just knowing you're not alone and in that very specific demographical way, I think I can only imagine that it just reinforced, because I know for me, when I was reading stories of other atheists at the time of my own deconversion, you know, and coming out, it helped tremendously. And I don't have the racial piece. I don't, you know, that adds in that extra layer. So that's really Ebony Exodus, you said?
Yes. Okay. The school. Excellent. And she's actually in the book too.
Oh, wonderful. Huh.
That's perfect. Okay, question number four. What is the geekiest thing you have ever done? And you can define geeky as you will.
I've done so many geeky things, but the most recent one was dressing up to go see Black Panther.
Yes!
I had a lot of fun putting on my Ankara prints and, you know, my face paint and doing my hair up really fun. Like that was pretty.
That's cool. Awesome. That's so awesome. All right, Deanna.
So, and I did that too, but I do not consider that geeky. That was for the culture.
Anna forever.
We had to do that. It's funny that we're not on video because if we were, the geekiest thing that I still do is play Magic the Gathering.
Oh,
yes.
And I was just at Comic Palooza Sunday and I got two new play mats and I was so excited.
Who's on them?
I've got these. Well, one of them is a tree, this really beautiful tree.
Yeah.
And the other is like this really beautiful castle, and one is mostly like these red fiery colors because I like to play red decks.
Uh-huh.
And the other is like this muted blue, which is pretty for the watercolors if I, you know, venture into some red blue decks. And yeah. See, I'm geeking out. As
no, that's good. That's good. Red blue's a good combination.
That's awesome. Question five, our last question. What is your favorite hangover cure?
This is such a good quality educational question.
It is.
So,
it's a public service question.
Mine is, so if I know that I'm going to be doing some heavy drinking, I take some Tylenol and I drink either some Gatorade or Pedialyte ahead of time because that kind of like gives me a little boost of, you know, painkiller and electrolytes and whatnot to sort of stave off the hangover. And then the next morning, no matter how I'm feeling, I get up and I just like guzzle water as much as I can.
Yep, yep.
Just sort of.
That's just science.
Science.
All right.
But, yeah, nothing fancy, but just like lots of Gatorade and water.
Yeah, that's good. All right.
I mean, same here. Water, water, sleep, and more water. So much so that, as Valerie said, if I know I'm going to be drinking, I'll drink one glass of water with every drink.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the next day, water. Coconut water also has a lot of electrolytes, and it's really good for you if you don't want to do the sugary things that are out there. So, yeah, water, coconut water, and rest it off.
I think that so that overwhelmingly this is the answer we usually get, and I'm going to just chalk it up to the fact that we have smart people on our show.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
Generally, people who identify as agnostic or atheist tend to be of a more educated background and have learned that there is a science to alcohol and dehydration. But then I think I keep hoping that someone's going to have some crazy like I swear by this, and it's going to be some weird superstition.
Well, we've had some weird stuff. I can't remember. We've had like 50 people now, but yeah. I can't. There's been some weird stuff in there.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised that no one wants us to like bury something under a full moon or anything weird, and then you won't have hangovers for a month.
No. Wrong podcast.
No strange witchy stuff happening with all our smart people. Well, thank you both, Valerie and Deanna. Thank you so much. This was really amazing. We are so lucky to have had you on our show. We really hope that the book does well. I think it's super great. I really think it's going to be a smash hit. So is there anything else that you guys want to say before we're done?
I just want to say thank you.
Great.
Absolutely.
I wasn't fishing for that, I swear to God. All right. Well, thank you so much. We've been Geeks Without God. If you want to answer our 5 questions, you can send them in to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. Please consider supporting us on Patreon. And if you haven't already, follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Rate us on iTunes. Do all the things. We are very appreciative. And again, make sure you go out and buy Women v. Religion, The Case Against Faith.
There's going to be a link on our website, so you can just go straight to Amazon and buy it from there.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you soon. Bye.
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 Turned out that prosperity gospel seed planting was the seeds of my atheism.
Hey-o. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter @GeeksWithoutGod. Social media!
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Twitter's a big thing these days.